Chapter 1. The We Decade. The 60s as a state of mind, and how the Anglo-American cultural continuum got here from there. We shall overcome. Pete Seeger's adaptation of a traditional gospel song, beloved of union activists and mandatory at 60s demonstrations. If you can remember the 60s, you weren't really there. Generally attributed to Robin Williams.
Hi, I'm Bob Dylan. Remember those fabulous 60s? The marches, the beans, the draft card burnings, and best of all, the music. Now Apple House has collected the best of those songs on one album called Golden Protest. And if you order now, you also receive a treasury of acid rock and the best of the supergroups. Yes, it's a collector's dream. Golden Protest and two fabulous 60s albums for only $3.95. If you were to purchase these selections separately, they'd cost you many hundreds of dollars, and many cannot be found today at any price.
The Dummy Bob Dylan on National Lampoon's Radio Dinner, 1972. The tragedy of our generation is that we will always be the kids. The only perceptive line ever heard in 30-something, 1989. The passing of time flattens everything. The altered perspective thus created annihilates the sequence of events and replaces it with the illusion of simultaneity. An illusion reinforced by the convenient habit of slicing history into neat, decade-sized chunks. The notion of the 60s as a clear-cut, homogeneous blob of time is an exceptionally persuasive one, creating as it does the myth of some strange, warped period. Turn left at the end of the 50s and emerge dazed, confused, and peculiarly dressed in time to turn right at the beginning of the 70s. Where Merseybeat and Macmillan, the Viet Cong and Vidal Sassoon, James Bond and Jack Kennedy, Andy Warhol and Harold Wilson, Danny the Red and David Frost, Martin Luther King and Mandy Rice Davies, all somehow rub shoulders, fellow guests at the longest cocktail party, fellow extras in the ultimate rock video. The correct response to the question, what really happened in the 60s, is when in the 60s, and where? Even the most widespread cultural phenomena, the totemization of youth, the public fascination with sexuality, the mass acceptance of rock music, the popular adoption of anti-establishment rhetoric as conversational small change, erupted in different settings at different times and for vastly different reasons. Britain and America had travelled highly dissimilar paths to reach their common eventual cultural destination. As one contracted, the other expanded. Britain had ended the Second World War as one of the nominal victors, but the nation was near destitute, exhausted, bloody and bruised. Its cities were ruined, its casualties, both military and civilian, enormous, its industries in tatters. Its debts were immense, and every erg of energy was needed to heal its wounds and to commence the daunting task of national reconstruction and renewal. America, on the other hand, emerged from the conflict as the dominant military and economic power. Of all the allies, it had given least, suffered least, and gained most, and it had the highest standard of living in the world. While Britain began the painful process of divesting itself of an empire it could no longer justify on moral, political, or practical grounds, America set about acquiring one. And of course, in terms of popular culture, Britain became part of that empire. As little Brits struggled with the remains of rationing and swilled national health orange juice, they gazed across the Atlantic and saw televisions in, seemingly, every home, huge gas-guzzling cars with chrome trimmings, beautiful clothes and money everywhere, all the signs of wealth, power, status, and conspicuous consumption. They watched American movies and TV shows, read American comic books, and listened to American music.